A tiny, bare bones circuit board, like the size of a credit card, now costs more than a fully assembled laptop.
It's completely wild.
Right. And at the exact same time, a single hacker on Reddit just figured out how to run a massive multi-million dollar AI model on a cheap, off-the-shelf consumer graphics card.
Yeah, the contrast there is just huge.
It really is. So welcome to today's deep dive into our daily tech stack, a collection of sources we're calling The State of Silicon, AI Advances, and Hardware Hurdles.
It's a great topic.
Yeah, and whether you are tinkering with local AI models on your home rig, or, you know, maybe you manage a massive engineering team, or if you're just trying to map out the absolutely blistering pace of innovation right now, today's reports reveal this massive tug of war happening beneath the surface of the tech you use every day.
Yeah, it is a profound structural tension. I mean, we have the most mind-bending decentralized software breakthroughs in history, right? And they are colliding head-on with very physical, very unforgiving economic roadblocks. The invisible forces that basically dictate what creators can actually build are just shifting completely beneath our feet.
They really are. And we're looking at a trio of developments today that perfectly capture this tension. We've got a hardware pricing crisis that is actively locking out the hobbyist community.
Which is so frustrating to see.
Oh, completely. Then we have a genuinely terrifying vulnerability discovered in the web's foundational software architecture. And finally, we have a brilliant community-driven AI breakthrough that basically hacks its way around those very limitations. So, okay, let's unpack this, starting with the physical hardware.
Right, the foundation of the foundation. So we are looking at a report from Jeff Gerling detailing what he calls the DRAM pricing crisis.
Right. DRAM.
Yeah, dynamic random access memory. It's the core memory chips required to process data in real time. And Gerling highlights how these memory costs are just skyrocketing to the point where they are completely upending the economics of single board computers, or SBCs, for the maker community.
And the numbers in this report, I mean, they are completely jarring.
Uh-huh.
A Raspberry Pi 5 equipped with 8 gigabytes of RAM now costs more than an entry-level laptop.
Yeah, let that sink in.
Seriously, think about that. When a tiny bare-bones circuit board requires you to bring your own screen, your own keyboard, your own power supply, and it still costs more than a fully assembled Chromebook, the supply chain math is just fundamentally broken.
It really is.
It's like trying to build a cheap DIY go-kart in your garage, but suddenly the steering wheel costs more than a used Honda Civic.
That is exactly what it feels like. And what's fascinating here is the macroeconomic reality driving this. Like, why is commodity RAM suddenly so incredibly expensive?
Yeah, what's causing that?
Well, it really comes down to silicon foundry allocation. The factories making these chips, they have finite capacity. And right now, the entire tech industry is obsessively pivoting toward massive enterprise AI.
Right, the huge server farms.
Exactly. And that requires a specific, incredibly complex type of memory called HBM, or high bandwidth memory, to feed those massive NVIDIA server GPUs.
Wow.
So because foundries like TSMC and SK Hynix are dedicating their production lines to high-margin HBM for data centers, they are effectively starving the supply of the cheaper standard RAM that goes into consumer electronics and single-board computers.
Which hits the hobbyist community at, like, the absolute worst possible moment.
Right, definitely.
Because the entire tech narrative right now is shifting toward edge computing and edge AI. You know, processing data locally on the device, like, say, a smart security camera that recognizes faces without sending video back to the cloud.
Right. And you need more RAM on the edge to actually run those local models.
Exactly. But the physical boards required to prototype those exact projects are becoming economically unviable.
Yeah, Gerling notes this is derailing everything from simple Internet of Things prototypes, like a smart soil monitor for an agricultural startup, all the way to complex edge robotics.
Whoa.
Historically, SBCs like the Raspberry Pi, they were the great democratizers of hardware. The barrier to entry was, what, $30?
Yeah, super cheap.
Right. But now the barrier isn't technical ingenuity anymore. It's purely financial.
Wait, I have to push back on this, though. The golden rule of silicon, the fundamental narrative we have operated under since, like, the 1960s, is Moore's Law.
Sure, Moore's Law.
Technology is supposed to get faster and cheaper over time. So is this just a temporary supply chain bottleneck as foundries build more factories? Or does this reflect a permanent shift in who actually gets to build new tech?
You know, that is the pivotal question of the decade. While the sources don't declare the absolute permanent death of cheap hardware, they clearly state that the current market dynamics are actively killing the independent maker ecosystem today.
Wow. Today.
Yeah. Foundries have realized where the massive profit margins are, and I'll tell you, it isn't in $30 educational boards. If this trend holds, we are looking at a future where only well-funded corporations have the capital to experiment with physical hardware.
Meaning they're essentially centralizing innovation back into the hands of a few giants, which is an incredibly grim thought. And, you know, if our physical hardware foundations are becoming restrictive, centralized, and prohibitively expensive, you would desperately hope that our software foundations, the code we build on top of the hardware, are rock solid.
You would certainly hope so, yeah.
But according to our next source, that glass jaw is completely exposed. Let's look at the Cybersweep report detailing a massive supply chain attack involving an open source software tool called Axios.
Right, so for some context here, Axios is a foundational JavaScript library. Essentially, it's a tool developers drop into their code to make web applications talk to the internet.
Okay, simple enough.
Yeah. So if an application needs to fetch data from a server, whether it's pulling your bank balance or just loading a weather widget, there is a very high probability it relies on Axios to handle that specific network request.
And when you say high probability, the report notes Axios has over 100 million weekly downloads.
Weekly? It's massive.
But an unknown attacker successfully hijacked the NPM account of the core Axios maintainer. And for those listening, NPM is basically the global registry, right? It's the central library where developers build systems go to automatically download these tools.
Exactly.
And the attacker got into that maintainer's account and published malicious versions of the software featuring remote access backdoors.
And we really need to emphasize the blast radius of how modern software is built here, because developers don't write every single line of code from scratch, right?
Yeah.
They pull in blocks.
Right. Libraries and dependencies.
Yeah, the modern web is an incredibly precarious tower of these blocks.
Yeah.
If you build an app, you pull in Axios. But thousands of other developer tools also pull in Axios automatically.
Oh, man.
So when an attacker publishes a malicious update, automated build pipelines all around the world see a new version, assume it's just a routine security patch, and automatically pull it in.
It is automated sabotage. It's like finding out the company that makes the flour for 90% of the world's bakeries accidentally let a saboteur into the factory.
That's a great way to put it.
Because the bakeries don't check the molecular structure of the flour every morning. They just bake the bread. Suddenly, millions of loaves of bread in thousands of different stores are poisoned simultaneously.
It is the ultimate leverage for a bad actor. And the Cyberscoop report notes that while this specific Axios attack was caught and contained before catastrophic damage was done.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it acts as a massive flashing warning sign about the fragility of the software supply chain. We are placing the security of the global digital economy on the shoulders of a handful of key maintainers.
But wait, how does something with 100 million weekly downloads rely on a single point of failure?
Yeah.
We are talking about load-bearing pillars of the entire internet. How does this all come down to one developer's account credentials being hijacked?
It's a great question.
Like, why isn't the tech industry as a whole enforcing massive corporate-level security audits on these foundational libraries?
Because that exposes the very uncomfortable truth of open-source economics. Many of these foundational tools, despite being used by multi-billion dollar corporations to generate massive profits, they are maintained by small teams or sometimes just a single individual working in their spare time for free.
That is just wild to think about.
They're critically underfunded and under-resourced. And sure, multi-factor authentication helps, but when a single maintainer is responsible for pushing updates to millions of corporate servers, that single point of failure isn't a bug in the system. Right now, that is the system.
So let's map out where we are. If you are a developer right now, the physical hardware you need to build local projects is becoming too expensive.
Right.
And the open source software supply chain you rely on to build web projects is structurally terrifying and vulnerable to incredibly wide-reaching attacks. It sounds, honestly, pretty bleak.
It does.
But this is exactly where the third piece of our tech stack comes in.
Yes. If we connect this to the bigger picture, we see a fascinating counterpunch from the developer community. If relying on the external web is dangerous and buying massive hardware is impossible, The only logical solution is to run incredibly powerful software entirely locally on the consumer hardware you already own.
Right, taking back control.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And our sources from the Our Local Llama community highlight a staggering breakthrough in making that a reality.
And here's where it gets really interesting. A solo Reddit user figured out how to fit a massive 27 billion parameter AI model, specifically the Qwen 3.527B model fully, onto a consumer-grade graphics card.
It's incredible.
We're talking about an NVIDIA RTX 5060 Ti with just 16 gigabytes of VRAM.
Yeah, to appreciate the scale of this, you have to look at the baseline math. A 27 billion parameter model usually requires a massive amount of memory just to load into a computer's brain, let alone actually generate text. Traditionally, you would need enterprise-grade hardware costing tens of thousands of dollars to do this. But this user achieved it on a standard mid-range gaming card using a new quantization technique they're calling TurboQuant.
Quantization being basically the process of squishing an AI model down by reducing the mathematical precision of its numbers.
Precisely. If you compress a file poorly, it gets distorted and becomes useless.
Mm.
But if you do it brilliantly, the human eye, or in this case, the end user interacting with the AI, can't even tell the difference.
But the memory footprint is drastically smaller.
Exactly.
Wait, I have to ask about this detail. You mentioned in your notes that they applied a specific mathematical trick called Walsh-Hadamard rotation to the model's weights and not just the KV cache.
Yeah, that's the key.
I follow the tech mostly, but you lost me there. Why does targeting the weights make such a massive difference, and what is this rotation actually doing?
It's a really crucial distinction. So the KV cache, or key value cache, is essentially the AI's short-term memory during a conversation. It's how it remembers what you said two paragraphs ago.
Okay, that makes sense.
And optimizing that is great. But the weights are the core foundational brain of the model itself. That's the actual 27 billion parameters.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So applying Walsh-Hadamard rotation to the weights is much harder. It is a mathematical technique that analyzes the data and redistributes the numerical outliers so everything is perfectly balanced.
Which means you can compress it further without breaking it.
Exactly.
So standard quantization is like packing for a trip by just aggressively folding your clothes until they wrinkle and tear to fit in the suitcase.
Right, just brute force.
But Walsh-Hadamard rotation is like vacuum sealing them. You are changing the physical pressure of the data so it shrinks perfectly without losing a single thread of context.
That is a perfect visualization.
Hey.
And because of that vacuum seal, they managed to achieve what the community calls near Q40 quality, but at a 10% smaller size. And Q40 just means bringing the model down to 4-foot precision. The ripple effects of this are moving fast. The wildly popular open source project Llama.cpp, which is what lets normal people run these models on MacBooks and PCs, is already integrating the TurboQuant KV cache.
That was fast.
Yeah. This instantly brings older, less efficient Q8 or 8-bit quantization methods up to roughly the quality of F16, which is 16-bit half precision. It's basically giving older, smaller files the intelligence of much larger, uncompressed models.
And the optimization isn't just about compression either. The Daily Stack also highlighted the local AI team releasing something called Apex MoE quantization.
Mm.
They targeted mixture of experts models.
Which is another massive leap. A mixture of experts or MoE model doesn't fire up all its parameters at once. It acts more like a manager.
Right.
If you ask it a math question, it routes the prompt to a smaller, specialized expert subnetwork rather than waking up the creative writing subnetwork. And the Apex release managed to shrink these incredibly complex routing models to be 2 times smaller than competitors.
That's huge. But let me push back on this entire premise for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
We started this deep dive talking about the DRAM pricing crisis and the hardware wall. If a breakthrough like TurboQuant means we can just mathematically vacuum seal a 27 billion parameter model to run on a cheap 16 gigabyte gaming card, do hardware limits even matter anymore? Can we just code our way out of the hardware crisis?
It is incredibly tempting to think so, but physics still dictates the absolute floor.
Yeah, you can't cheat physics.
Right. Software optimization like TurboQuant buys us runway. It extends the utility of the hardware sitting on your desk right now, allowing it to punch far above its weight class. But you eventually hit a mathematical wall.
Back to the suitcase analogy.
Exactly. You can only vacuum seal a shirt so much before the fabric itself ceases to exist.
Yeah.
So while TurboQuant empowers you today, the rising cost of foundational memory is still a macro level threat. You will eventually need a bigger suitcase.
TurboQuant proves we can squeeze the current math to its absolute physical limits. But to push past that wall, researchers are realizing they have to stop squeezing and start rewriting the math entirely.
Yes.
Which brings us to our final segment, the bleeding edge. Developers aren't just optimizing, They're going down to the studs to change how an AI even thinks.
This is where the research gets truly fascinating.
Yep.
The sources highlight a brand new development called RBF attention.
Okay, RBF attention.
Yeah. And to understand why this matters, you need to know that for years, large language models have relied on a mechanism called self-attention to understand the context of a sentence. Traditionally, they calculate this using dot products.
And this researcher completely threw out dot products and replaced them with distance-based kernels. So why does distance make an AI smarter or faster?
Well, normally, calculating similarity using dot products is like looking at two words and asking, are we facing the exact same direction?
Right.
But RBF attention changes the math to look at how physically close the words are represented in a multidimensional mathematical space. It's the difference between asking, are we facing the same way, versus are we standing in the exact same room?
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
Right. It is a much more robust, nuanced way for the AI to understand relationships between concepts.
But the report notes they had to completely rip out the engine to do this. Like they had to write custom Triton kernels, and they had to completely replace RoP.
RoP stands for Rotary Position Embedding.
Yeah.
It is essentially the internal GPS the AI uses to remember the exact order of words in a sentence, like how it knows the dog bit the man is different from the man bit the dog.
Right.
Because RBF fundamentally changes how distance is calculated, that old GPS had to be thrown out. And to make this massive shift run efficiently on a graphics card, they had to write custom Triton kernels.
And Triton is?
Triton is a specialized language that allows developers to send low-level hyper-specific instructions directly to the NVIDIA silicon, completely bypassing the standard bottlenecks.
It is a fundamental rewiring of the engine. Mm-hmm. And the open source community is just firing on all cylinders across the board right now. In the same stack of news, we see RCAI releasing a new model called Trinity Large Thinking on Hugging Face.
Yep.
It's specifically designed to push the boundaries of structured, complex reasoning without needing a massive server farm. Plus, Microsoft just open-sourced a frontier voice AI called Vibe Voice, which hit over 1,700 stars on GitHub in a single day.
It's moving so fast.
Yeah.
And when you look at these rapid-fire developments, RBS, attention fundamentally changing the math, Trinity optimizing reasoning, Vibe Voice pushing local audio generation, it synthesizes into a very clear, very disruptive picture.
Yeah.
The constraints of expensive hardware are not slowing open source innovation down. The constraints are acting as a pressure cooker, forcing the innovation to accelerate into entirely new paradigms.
So what does this all mean? The tech ecosystem you are operating in right now is sitting in a bizarre paradox. On one side, you are facing immense structural friction. Physical boards are becoming prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
The foundational open source web supply chains you rely on, like Axios, are fragile and actively targeted by attackers.
But the flip side of that is explosive decentralized ingenuity.
Exactly. You have breakthroughs like TurboQuant allowing you to run massive models locally on consumer GPUs. You have deep mathematical innovations like RBF attention, rewriting the rules of processing.
Yeah.
The major takeaway is that you absolutely do not need a $1 billion data center to run cutting edge AI workflows anymore.
But as you build these local workflows, you must remain vigilant. The power to run these tools is decentralized, but the risk of pulling down a compromised package from the open web is higher than ever.
You have to audit what you pull into your local machine.
And that brings us to a final provocative thought. If our open source software ecosystem is simultaneously our greatest vulnerability, as we saw with the automated sabotage of the Axios hack, and our absolute greatest strength, as we saw with the incredible TurboQuant optimization, what happens when AI itself starts auditing and maintaining these critical supply chains?
Oh, man, that's a thought.
Think about it. We are running these incredibly capable reasoning models locally now. Will the next major supply chain exploit or the next groundbreaking mathematical optimization come from a human researcher on Reddit? Or will it be discovered and deployed by an AI agent independently combing through millions of lines of open source code?
That is exactly the kind of invisible force we started this conversation talking about. That tug of war is only going to get more intense as the tools themselves join the game.
Absolutely.
Well, that is all we have for today's deep dive. We hope you leave this conversation feeling a bit smarter, a bit more aware of the foundations you're building on, and eager to explore these concepts further on your own. Keep questioning the tools you use, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.